everyone, and welcome to Commander Cast episode.
Boobs.
God damn it, Clay! Okay, there you go, Calvin. There's your soundbite. I'm gonna do this again.
Whoops.
Hello everyone and welcome to Commander Cast episode 183 for your weekly source for community, strategy, and technology, hosted on mtgcast.com and our home site, commandercast.com. We're recording this on January 15th, 2015. I'm your host of the show, William. With me is my perennial co-host, Clay, the Commander Panda. How are you doing today, sir?
Pretty well, man. How are you?
I'd be doing better if our cast members weren't getting killed off by the plague.
True. That would be nice. I'm assuming you're next. I'm not quite sure. It might be me.
No, I can't die. I went through a whole month of starting podcasts. Okay, if that hasn't killed me off, nothing's going to kill me off. In fact, I'm pretty sure if I was going to end the show, it wouldn't be on some sort of obtuse number like 183. Just saying. Okay. All right, so speaking of cast members who aren't here, Calvin's still at school. Don't worry, you'll hear him later on our home version. Mark actually apparently came down with the plague. Thank you, high school kids, for not washing your hands and sneezing everywhere. But you know what? We do have a guest. We have Christian from East Coast Commander. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
We're doing great. Christian was pretty happy to come on and help talk about some spoilers with us. Isn't that right?
Yes, always nice to talk about spoilers, and I am plague-free, as it is so cold up here in Canada right now. All viruses have been killed off.
Which is why I always give my viruses and pandemic, you know, cold resistance, because otherwise trying to get into Greenland's a bitch.
Yes.
So, germ jokes aside, we're going to go ahead and we have a lot to talk about, so we're just going to go ahead and go through this, and it's made a little easier by the fact that we only have three people, but we'll just make that up with pure volume, sure, why not?
We'll make the most of it, we're good.
Definitely. Okay, so, first thing we're going to start off with, favorite commanders this week. Christian, as the guest, you will have first words.
Oh, thank you. For my favorite commander this week, I'm going old school. A few weeks ago, I built a Angus McKenzie Super Friends deck, and it has been a lot of fun. So we're going to go with that for today.
All right.
It's a lot of fun, and he's got a little bit of ramp in there and kind of a little token sub theme in case my planeswalkers start getting hosed. But it's really fun, and what can I say about planeswalkers? Gideon, Champion of Justice, is not as bad as you think he is. Let's put it that way. He actually kind of is, but that's all right.
Well, I mean, like, in a deck full of Super Friends, he's, like, just the one real beat stick you have, right?
Yeah, it's, like I said, I built the token sub-theme into the deck, so if, you know, if I don't get to that, that Kiora ultimate or the, you know, the Venser ultimate, the Tamiya ultimate, the big ones, then I can kind of use some tokens and get a, like, a Garruk overrun going, so... But, you know, it's been a fun deck, and I don't find it. I was worried when I first built it would be a little slow, but I haven't found it that way, and it's been fun. So I figured I'd give him a shout-out because he has been sent away to be altered by the wonderful Modfly Alters. So I'm currently not playing him, so I will list him as my favorite as kind of a shout-out to all the good times we've had over the last month or so.
What are you getting him altered as?
I'm getting a kind of like a stained glass where he's going to look like super pious and holy, but he's still going to have like the crazy horned helm on, like with the horns off the side. So, I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, kind of like that, exactly. So I kind of leaving it up to the artist's imagination, but...
You'll have to send us a picture of it when you get it back.
Oh, for sure, of course. I'll put it up on the Twitter feed at EastCoastEDH for sure.
Awesome. So, have you managed to get, like, Teferi's Limit Break off?
I have not pulled Teferi's off yet. I've done Tamiyo a couple times, and I've done a Johnny Steadfast, which is It is very good, especially because you can do it, the tourney comes out if you have Doubling Season in play. But, I actually lost a game once with a Johnny Steadfast's ultimate off to an Apocalypse Hydra who just kept pinging me for one and one and one and one, and it was super annoying. But I guess that is what it is.
Wow.
Yeah.
Just not even just beatdown from the Apocalypse Hydra, just constant poking with the Hydra.
Yeah, like I had the Steadfast ultimate off, so even if he hit me for 20 with the Hydra, it still only would have been one because of the emblem. But I was pretty low in life when I had pulled it off, and he had a whole bunch of open mana. It's a Rasheen Meander deck, so he's got like tons and tons of ramp hit. And it was just like, I'll shoot you for one. I was like, oh, reduce the damage to one. Shoot you for one, reduce the damage to one, until I eventually die.
It's like he's poking you, he's going, are you dead yet? Are you dead yet? Are you dead yet? Are you dead yet?
Pretty much.
Basically.
And he's my buddy Dave from my playgroup. He's a super nice guy, and he's really, really low key and unassuming. So I could just see it in his eyes. He was so nice about it. He was just like, hit you for one, hit you for one, hit you for one. I was just like, make it stop!
it's like Chinese waterboard torture.
Yeah, you need like, Urza's armor in there or something.
I know, right?
But invincible.
Regardless, the deck's a lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to getting it back and playing it some more. So,
all right. So, last question: whose Limit Break is the easiest for you to get off?
Probably the aforementioned Johnny Steadfast or Tamiyo, because they are both very powerful, and you can do them the turn they come out with Doubling Season or something like that, right? So that's really good. Cure is one I find is pretty effective, but she's a little slow getting started. So, and Venser's is obviously backbreaking, but the easiest ones are definitely the ones that can go off the turn they come out with, like Doubling Season or something like that out. So, yeah.
Oh, actually, I lied. There is one last question because I just thought of it. Chain Veil, have you tested it, and how have you been liking it so far?
I have tested it. If I really have to wait, you have to wait. You have to wait for the right time to play it, because I've played it early before where I only had like maybe one walker out or two walkers out, and you know someone immediately blows it up. Like because they know how powerful it can be, or they assume how powerful it can be. So I really have to wait until I've got, you know, maybe one or two of them at a decent, you know, limit. They're almost ready to go off, and then you can drop it with lots of mana, tap it right away, get the extra effects, and then just kind of go to town. Because, you know, people start, you know, worrying about the emblem when you see those big scary emblems, right? And people are like, oh, I can't let them get to that. I can't let them get to that. So it's, I find it dropping it too early, thinking, oh, I'm going to get a couple extra activations. In my experiences recently, it's not worth it. It's more or less just like, wait for it, and then just slam it down, tap your mana, tap it, and just go for the gusto all at once, because that's worked best for me.
Okay, so it actually works more like a finisher for your deck then.
Yeah, I'm fine. Like if I need to get someone over the top on their ultimate or their limit break, or if I need, you know, another beast token out of Garruk or something like that, like it's knowing when to play it. The card is definitely very powerful, and then the artwork on it is really cool. It's very thematic, so I like it. But I'm really finding that I can't just drop it and say, okay, I can get some extra activations whenever I want. So, yeah.
Awesome. Okay, so next, Clay, who's your favorite commander this week?
I'm still going to have to go with Bramaz, King of Horeskos, because this deck is way too fun not to play. It's just straight up Tiny Leader's Beanies. And I finally found my Mutavaults and put one in, and it has not disappointed me yet.
So, Clay.
Yeah?
Do you mean regular EDH, or...?
I can put something up for regular EDH, I guess.
Well, I mean, like, no, it's perfectly legit. I just want you to clarify for the people.
For Tiny Leaders.
For Tiny Leaders, there you
go. Because I've been playing a lot of it on the not-quite-Modo application that I'm not sure if we're allowed to talk about, but I guess you probably talked about it a couple episodes ago, so. Can I say the name?
Yes.
Cockatrice.
There you go.
Because I'm pretty sure Modo doesn't support Tiny Leaders yet.
Nope.
Not yet.
But we did do a PTQ where we actually were hosting Tiny Leader pods if enough people signed up. which I don't think it did, because it was just kind of announced that day, I guess. But, yeah.
Fair.
How's it, how are you finding it, Clay? Do you like it?
I like the format a lot. I've seen a lot of really interesting decks playing online. Like, I've played against everything from Azuri Elfthal to, Jund Dark Depths using Adun or Zira Irion.
Okay.
There's just a lot of stuff you can do with the limitation of CMC 3 or less. There was one game the other day, I was playing Nin the Pain Artist.
Yep.
And through a combination of, like, Pyrostatic Pillar and other things, I got both of us down to 2 life, so neither of us could actually cast spells, except for the fact that I play X-Burn spells that would eventually kill him.
Nice. The reason why I asked is because it's really caught on here where I am, and my local game store, GameZilla, is actually doing a whole February. Every F&M in February is going to be Tidy Leaders, so I'm really looking forward to
that. Wow!
Yeah, there's a fair bit of, we don't play a lot of Legacy out here, but, just cause there's not that many of us that have Legacy decks for it, so.
Yeah.
But just with the similarities to Legacy and where there, we do have a pretty solid number of Commander players, I think people are kinda, treating it as a nice halfway point, people that wanna play Legacy but can't really get through the barriers, and then, like, hey, I have most of these cards already, you know what I mean? So I've constructed 4 different decks, for one to play every week, and then I've got 2 more decks list done up for loners in case, because there's some younger kids and stuff that come to the F&Ms that play modern and stuff, so I've got a couple constructed loner decks in case they want to jump in too, so.
It's a really
exacting thing.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
It's just a really good, like, combination of the deck building restrictions of EDH and the uniqueness of having a commander and then the competitiveness of Legacy or Modern.
Yep.
I play Death and Taxes in Legacy, so the first thing I did was, like, build Thalia right away, and I was like, yeah, this is good. I like this.
I made that mistake, too. I say it's a mistake only because I had to fight Clay's Bremaz deck with it. And,
nice.
And we, you know this, Christian. Death and Taxes can't beat fair decks.
No. Why not?
The other really interesting one that I played against was, like, Azusa Prison, which sounds really weird when I say it that way. But it was, like, Azusa with, like, Trinisphere, Sphere of Resistance, Crucible plus Ghost Quarter, the like, white stone rain, or the green stone rains and stuff. It was really strange. Like, I kicked its ass, but it was a really cool deck to see.
Yeah. Get your Bremazes now, kids. That guy is just a house in Tiny Leaders.
He's a house in every format that he's in, basically.
Yes, but more so in Tiny Leaders, because it's like he's going around the playground and he's punching kids.
He's a 4/5 Vigilance for 3. Like,
yeah. So I play Death and Taxes Legacy and I play Death and Taxes in Modern too, and obviously the Modern version isn't nearly as powerful, but I play 3 Bremazes in my Modern list, and I play them and I can just, because Jeskai is so huge right now, and everyone with, like, you know, 3 lightning bolts in their hand is just like, oh man, like, he's got 4 body, that sucks. And I'm just laughing, I love it.
You're just 2-for-1 them all day.
Exactly, right? So no, it's a good card, and my 1v1 commander competitive list is Izumaru, and I play one in there as kind of like a backup commander, and he's solid at that too. So
I played Martyr of Sands for a little bit just because the early life boost, but then I realized it wasn't good after like turn 2.
Right.
So I replaced it with an Izumaru, and I haven't been disappointed.
Yeah, Izumaru is one of my favorite cards. I love it.
Alright. And finally, my favorite deck of the week, to kind of go with this theme, is Karthus, Tyrant of Jund. Karthus is actually the second oldest deck that I have. So Karthus, in ye olden days of the original precons, I only had the Rift the Awakener deck that was pretty much Naya junk rares. You know, like every first EDH deck starts without going up and grabbing lists or whatever. So when I got the Kali deck, I also ordered the stuff I needed for a Karthus list that I saw, and he's been intact ever since. Now, he's also been one of those decks where once I had the list together and I had all the big stompy dragons, I would bring him out occasionally. I'd ramp out, I'd play Karthus, people would freak out, they'd kill me, I'd be like, oh, okay. And, you know, he just kind of hung around as he was, because there wasn't really a whole lot of tinkering I wanted to do with the deck. Like, the deck just felt fine as it was. So I spent a lot of my attention working on the other 25 decks that I have. But you know what happened? Durgans. Fate Reforged and Tarkir and Durgans. So I gave Karthus the old dust off, took it to the game shop, and the first thing the guy at the shop says when I started playing Karthus is, oh, you built a Karthus in anticipation for dragons, right? I mean, to be fair, he had never seen me play Karthus because, again, it was one of those decks where I felt like everything was fine. I didn't really need to mess with it. But this does lead us into a very interesting topic that we'll get to in just a moment when we get to our community segment. So, Karthus, Durgans, love it. So, quick for our news segment, we have community ban poll, ban the whales, as per the usual.
Yep.
Once again, let's see, this episode comes out on the 19th.
Just after the pre-releases.
Yep. And then, so let's see. So the last week of January, that's actually going to be January 30th to February 1st. That's when the Anime Convention OhioCon is going to be going on in Columbus, and that's where I'm going to be at. A couple of listeners have already gotten in touch with me on Twitter, so during the Masquerade, I'll be hanging out in the game room. We'll play some Commander, we'll meet up, it'll be an actual thing. I think a lot more people would be a lot more excited to know that it looks like I'm definitely headed towards GP Cleveland in March. Like, I've already applied to judge there, I haven't heard back on whether they'll have me on staff, but even if I don't get accepted, I'll still head up. I'll still do like GP and publicity things. I've got a friend up there, I think she's in Akron, so I'll be like 50 minutes away, that's not a problem. So, GP Cleveland, I'm currently working on being there, and as long as I'm not in the judge staff, I will be actually interacting with people on a full weekend basis. That'll be pretty cool.
Nice.
Alright, so I don't think there's really any other news we need to worry about, although it is worth noting that people were starting to freak out a little bit in my area when the release notes hadn't been released yet. Because
haven't
we're
they
like,
been released yet?
Yeah, they have been released.
Okay, I should probably read those before this weekend.
Yeah, because, like, you know, Manifest was just the big thing that we were worried about. Like,
right.
Yeah. Like, well, it's not a morph card, so do you have to show it when it bounces? And yeah, you do. Just like, it turns out that's kind of just a general rule for face-down cards, period. So remember, kids, if you didn't do that at your pre-release, you cheated. Way to go. Time travel's weird. All right. Also, fun fact, it officially makes double-face cards triple-face cards.
But really, though.
They really do.
It's really weird, but somehow it works, but it's still kind of stupid in a way.
I like it. It's
I'm trying to wrap my head around it because
well the concession.
Okay, so for listeners who don't know, they updated rulings. So like let's say you have a Delver of Secrets on the top of your library and you cast something that manifests the top card of your library, so the old ruling was that there was no way for double faced cards to be put face down. Because both sides are considered face up. However, Manifest allows you to put them into play face down. But when they get flipped face up, they'll come up on their normal sunny side.
Yep. And then once they're face up, they can't be turned face down because, again, they're flip card. They're double face card, so they can't have a face down.
Yeah. This is given. Transform normally.
Yeah.
Afterwards.
But remember, when you're playing with a double face card, you either have them in sleeves, so it kind of has that face.
Yeah.
That back face, or you're using a checklist card. Which, again, has that normal magic back. And that's kind of the concession that they made.
Yeah.
Unless, of course, you're one of those cheating cheatersons who are playing double-faced cards without sleeves and you think that's okay.
The only awkward interaction that ruling was even relevant for was, what is it, Illusionary Mask?
No, I think it was for, like, Break the Day. It's the card that I keep hearing about.
No, that was just... flip cards aren't face down, or I think. But Illusionary Mask allows you to put a creature card from your hand into play face down. It basically allows you to morph anything.
Yeah.
And the ruling on that was because double faced cards can't be face down, then you can't.
But I guess
this new ruling may update that to be that you can put them face down.
Yeah.
We'll have to see.
Hey, pyramid cards.
Getting okay. Complicated.
It's complicated. It makes my head hurt. You know what doesn't make my head hurt? Durgan! Let's go ahead and talk about Durgan.
Durgans.
So coming up in our PG segment, we're going to talk about Durgan! Stay tuned, everyone. We'll be right back.
I knew you were going to say dragons. I just knew it.
Durgans.
Okay, so, brand new Commander Cast drinking game for you people at home. Every time we slip up and actually say the word dragon, take a drink. Because our goal is to mispronounce Durgan as many times as possible. That's what the hip kids these days do, right?
I think so.
Excessive drinking? That's what the hip kids do. For the Commander Cast home game.
So, Big Root Forge, we've got Durgan! Oh my god! So many Durgans! Durgans. Highest Aspen of Durgans. Durgans are best Durgans. Wow! So
there's a pretty high concentration of Durgans.
Yeah, even the not Durgans, all of them look awesome. I love how there's, like, Durgans in so much of the art, so that you still feel the presence even if we don't actually have that many Durgans. I mean, we've got, like, a cycle of Uncommon, we've got one Lava Axe Durgan. It's all really cool. But, kind of what I was going to say with the Karthus deck is that this set gives me new life. Like, what does I was saying the Karthus deck was, it was pretty much what I thought it was pretty much perfect. Like, there wasn't a whole lot I needed to do to fix it. It was doing the stuff I wanted to do. It was fine. But now we've got new toys to play with. We've got, like, a reverse acidic slime Durgan kind of thing. We've got pinging Durgans, we got dashing Durgans, we got double striking Durgans. So many Durgans. I love it so much. And I realized, wait, this is exactly what happened with Sigarda when Theros came out last year. We got a whole bunch of brand new enchantments and Voltron stuff, and Sigarda just thrived on it, and during that block, she was one of my favorite decks to play. So that got me thinking, some of these decks just kind of give life to older decks that we have, don't they? So I'm gonna go ahead and ask you guys if you've experienced anything similar.
I mean, like I said on last week's episode, back when Theros came out, it inspired me to create the deck that is my Kron deck. This new set is wanting me to build, like, Scion of the Ur-Dragon.
Well, I mean, like, yeah, new sets can inspire new decks, but I'm talking about, like, an old deck idea you had, or an old deck that you used to play, that you kind of like, I had a lot of fun with this, but I'm not as into it now. But then the new set comes along and you're like, oh my god, this is the perfect spark my married life needed.
I guess it might just be that I haven't built enough decks, or I haven't, like, retired enough decks to be able to feel that way. Because I still play pretty much everything.
What about you, Christian?
Nothing's really jumped out at me as crazy from the new set that I, other than the double striking dragon as a auto include in Xenagos. So I have no idea what I'm going to cut for it, but it'll obviously be in there because, come on, there's, a handful of other dragons in Xenagos, and they're all, big, Hellkite, Tyrant, seven power type stuff, right? So who wouldn't want to double strike them, right? So, but other than that, there's a few interesting cards I'm thinking about maybe for Ghost Council of Orzhova, and I'm just actually going through the spoiler right now to see if I can back that up with anything, but there were a few that I thought. Rally the Ancestors was one that I was thinking, because I recently changed my Ghost Council of Orzhova deck from a kind of bleeder token deck to, like, a reanimator style deck. So anytime I see something that brings a lot of stuff back at once or, has some recursion effects to it, I'm always really interested in. And, I don't know. I've never been a guy for extra turns. But Temporal Trespass, where it does exile itself, I feel like it could go in my Izzet deck without, feeling like it's, super broken or, annoying my friends and playmates, whatnot, right? So, but yeah, no, most likely, most what I'm looking forward to is the double striking dragon whose, name is escaping me and I can't seem to
locate
him at the moment.
World Render.
That would be him. Her. He's also got really cool art, her. Right? So it's,
yeah, they're all lady dragons. Yeah. It's like the T-Rex from Jurassic Park. You gotta respect that. Otherwise,
exactly.
she'll just fuck you up.
Just wreck you, exactly. So no, I'm really looking forward to that card, and I do play Xenagos a lot. It was my favorite deck for the longest time. It's the deck that I've worked hardest on, kind of, foiling out and getting some alters for and stuff like that. So, I'm hoping to pick up one of those on foil, if possible, as soon as possible. But, no, that's the biggest thing for me from this set, is just like a new big beater for my big smash face deck, right? So, that's good.
Alright, so, like, then let's look at the previous theme. Like, you guys played Wedge decks before Cons came out, right?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So, like, was the fact that this was a Wedge, set with Cons of Tarkir, did that get you interested in, like, looking at some of your older Wedge decks at all, thinking, okay, let's go ahead and look at some of the spoilers. Oh, some of these things are actually pretty cool. I might have to think about how I want to retool or even rebuild this deck.
It did for me a little bit because I had Zedru built for a while. Obviously, it's a very specific deck, and you're not going to get a card here, a card here from every set kind of thing because of what it's supposed to do. I've been more interested in, the basic parts of the set, like the new tri-lands and the new refuge lands and whatnot, because I'm also an avid cuber and I like to have, cards like that for my cube, and I always like to have budget options for my commander deck. So stuff like that, like the new tri-lands, the new refuge lands, and then some notable reprints and stuff are, what I've been happiest about.
Man, this makes me wish that Mark was here. Like, we just needed someone with that dearth of experience or something. Ah, well. So, let's go ahead and talk about... So, actually, this would lead good into another question. So, what do you really look for in a new set to find something that makes you excited? Like, obviously, cards that are powerful or do something new and innovative, those are the kind of things that catch your eye. But specifically, what kind of new cards excite you?
Well, you kind of took the words away, but things that are just, like, new and powerful and do unique things.
Well, I mean, like, what would you qualify as interesting and unique? Because, like, yeah. I count Kalia as still interesting and cool, even though she's linear and everyone, and, like, 90% of our listeners would say, no, she's boring as hell. Why would you say that?
But effects that you don't see often, like, just some of the things in the set, like, they basically reprinted, Figure of Destiny, or at least in a brand new way, as one of the Mythic Cycle. My brain's not really working right now.
No, but that's a really good example, though, because, like, the new Figure of Destiny, if that's what you want to call it, is really interesting.
Yeah.
It's in different colors, but it does similar things, but it has a very different art style and everything to it. I really like that card. You know, I don't really have a deck for it right now, but regardless, I found it really interesting, right? But for me, when new sets come out, the first thing I always look for is the mechanics. I always like the small things or sometimes big things that change, like, the overall fundamentals of the game. Like, I'm not sure how Dash is going to work out, but it seems really interesting to me, especially, like, on some of the goblins and stuff where you can just kind of get, you know, constant attacking with them and stuff like that, and you have to have instant speed removal to deal with them. I think is really cool. And I mean, even the dragon cycle, I know that's not a mechanic per se, but it's, we've always had dragons in the game. There's always been interesting creatures and interesting creature types that are dragons, but just to kind of get a whole cycle of the different colors, and especially the fact that the Dimir one doesn't mill, which is the first non-milling Dimir legendary creature we've had in, like, what, 10 years, which is really interesting. So, but, so the mechanics I look for first, but then I just like to look for the little differences, you know, in the cards or cards that were, similar in the past, and maybe the new printing just does something slightly different.
Alrighty then. I was hoping there'd be a little more me here, but then again, I was also hoping that we'd have our other co-host here. So, actually, I haven't had a chance to say my part yet then. So, for me, the first thing I kind of look for are, like, the new legends for color combinations, where I haven't really settled on anyone yet, you know? Like, right now I've got Riku as my teamer deck, but I'm not really satisfied with him yet. Like, he does things that I like, but I'm not satisfied with that kind of deck. So, when I'm looking at teamer generals and what we have so far, which is kind of sparse, to be honest, I'm thinking, okay, Surak, I could just kind of do whatever there, but my friends built that too, so eh. Animar, I did before, Tribal Hydra, but that was a thing, but wasn't as great there. Maelstrom Wanderer, I love Maelstrom Wanderer, but I want to be able to play counter spells. So I'm kind of looking for that new build around me card that can just give me a direction. Like, it doesn't necessarily have to be the commander itself, but it gives me a new build around direction that says, hey, look at me, come up with some ideas, some cool synergies, and now you suddenly have a deck idea. Like how there's a black-white enchantment that makes zombies and then gives zombies lifelink. I can't remember what it is.
Oh, gosh.
Necromancer's Covenant, I think? I need to look this up now. Yeah, it was Necromancer's Covenant.
Ah.
Yeah, like, it's a black-white enchantment that inspired me to build a zombie and spirit token deck for Taysa. And that's kind of what I look for now. So I'm looking through the spoilers and stuff like Yasova Dragonclaw. That's exciting for me because that's a new build-a-rambic card that I can try out. She's not like Surak where you can just kind of build them however you want and you've got a deck. Yasova has a specific thing that she does, and you have to kind of tailor the deck around to really pull out the full potential of her ability. Incidentally, I also look at the Atarka Dragon, and she's also another kind of build-around-me-ish general. So
she just wants dragons.
Dargons! Dargons!
Ah, sorry.
It's okay. It's their livers.
True. I'm sorry, listeners.
Yep. I will say the only thing that disappoints me a little bit is that that now that I have, like, certain decks that are set to be built a certain way, like I built Narset Equipment Voltron. You know, a lot of the Jeskai cards work with prowess and just casting incense and sorceries kind of work the best that way. So I can include some of them, but they're not all going to really go in there. Like, Soulfire Grandmaster is awesome, and I'm going to try and put her into the Narset deck as much as I can. But synergy-wise, it's better to just have, like, the normal equipment duders and whatnot.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a really good point, like, just going back to what you said about Yasova. Like, I really liked that card when it first came out, and it was really interesting because, you know, if before you read all her text and everything, it's like, oh, okay, she's a 4-power for 3 mana with Trample. Like, so she screams Voltron. But because of her actual abilities, it gives you different options. Like, of course, yeah, you can play her as a Voltron general, but because you can essentially steal creatures, it opens up all these different possibilities of how you want to play that. You know what I mean? So, I can definitely see your point, Will, about, you know, generals that do slightly different things, just to make things, you know, kind of interesting, right? Like, Shen Yu, the Silent Tempest, is another really good example, right? So he's a 3/2 for 3 in blue, which is, you know, kind of different with Prowess. And, you know, just another ability tied to red, white, and target creature gains double strike till end of turn. Well, you know, typically that's not something that, you know, what you would see in a blue general. I know obviously you have access to red and white in that too, which has double strike, but it's just, it's a little different, and it's something that if you want to build around or take a theme with it, it can, you know, it can really make a card stand out, right?
Actually, since we're on the topic of commanders, let's go ahead and take a small break. We're going to end the community segment here so we can just go ahead and jump into the next one. Stay tuned, everyone. Next up, we're going to go into our strategy segment. We're going to start talking about legendary creatures. Little awkward of a transition, but I think it works.
Yeah. It'll be all right.
Now we're going to get to the important part here. With Fate Reforged, we have 10 brand new legendary creature commanders that we can use for Wedge and Ally decks. And you know what? They're actually really interesting, cool build-around cards, so we're just going to go straight into it. We're going to do the old classic Rubeborg order cons first. The first guy we're going to talk about is Doggatar the Adamant. For a 4 cost, you get a human warrior. He's base white, he's got vigilance, and it's with 4/1/1 counters on it, but has an activated ability with his other two colors. That's kind of how we're getting these cons cards, right? They have to play well with dragons and cons of Tarkir. So we have monocolor commanders with off-color activation costs to make them technically wedge. And it's a pretty cool color card design. So what's Dagadar do? He says, pay 1 hybrid of Golgari, move a 1/1 counter from target creature onto a second target creature. Meaning that this guy can now start messing around with combat math by just stealing other players' counters or moving your guys around or being like, oh, well, at least we didn't put all eggs in one basket, so I'll just go ahead and move our eggs to this other basket. What do you guys think?
I find he's pretty interesting. I think since you're only moving 1/+1/+1 counter at a time, it might be a little overcosted, I think. I know there's all kinds of shenanigans you can get into in Commander when you start moving token or counters around, pardon me. But I think for 3 mana to move 1 counter, like, you're gonna need a lot of resources to really do some bonkers stuff with this guy, right? But I mean, the art's really cool, and I really like the design of the, that's right, Hardened Scales would be a very interesting, you know, can work with it very well, right? Mm-hmm. But I don't know, this was, out of the ones that came out, like, obviously there were a few that really stood out to me that had this kind of wedge ability. This was, I found, my own personal opinion, this was kind of the weakest of the 5, but, you know, it's up to you guys, what do you guys think?
I think he's pretty sweet, because he definitely seems like he would fit right in something like Gave Guru of Spores, some sort of build like that, where you're taking advantage of being able to place counters, play it with, like, Doubling Season, Hardened Scales. Yeah, the ability might seem overcosted, but when you realize that you can snag counters off of your opponent's creatures as well, then it kind of makes more sense on why it's costed like that.
Yeah, I can see that.
If it was much cheaper, then it would probably just be way too easy to just wreck your opponent's day by making your guys bigger and shrinking theirs.
Yeah, he seems like he'd be pretty overpowered in the mirror match and something like that, right? Like, he'd just be pretty disgusting.
Yeah.
I mean, well, for one thing, he kind of feels like Gave Light. Like, I heard that over on Rivals Duel when Noel and Eric were talking about him, and I think Gave Light sounds about right. But it's also cool how you can, like, include Skullbriar in his deck, and you can just kind of use Skullbriar as, like, this counter farm.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, because even if Skullbriar dies, then he keeps all those counters, so you just gotta find a way to bring Skullbriar back, and you just start moving counters around again. Which I think is actually pretty cool.
Or if your opponent's playing Skullbriar, you just, like, snag the counters off.
Yeah. Keep him getting too big too fast.
The ultimate anti-Skullbriar attack.
No, dude. Slight derailing. The ultimate anti-Skullbriar tech is that one card that one that's like deals two damage or puncture blast or thing or puncture bolt, I think. Yeah, deals one damage to target creature. Put a -1/-1 counter on that creature. So Skullbriar dies with a -1/-1 counter on it. It will always have that -1/-1 counter because of the wording on it.
But see, Puncher Blast deals 3 damage, and it has Wither.
I mean, that also works, but just, like, on turn 2, like, Puncture Bolt your Skullbriar.
Actually, for that matter, Infect creatures would just wreck Skullbriar, period.
Yeah.
Huh, I hadn't thought about that.
Here's some tech for the Danglebits, guys.
The more you know.
Now we know.
And knowing is half the battle.
So, overall, Daggedar the Adamant, I've heard a lot of people be meh about him, especially on our Facebook page, where you can like us, CommanderCast, I'm good at plugs.
That was excellent.
But I think Daggedar's fine.
Yeah.
So,
I like him.
Okay, so, Clay, you want to go ahead and read off Shunyun? Or Shuyun?
Okay.
Yeah.
Shuyun, the Silent Tempest. For 2 and a blue, you get a 3/2 human monk with prowess. Whenever you cast a non-creature spell, you may pay 2 hybrid Boros, so any combination of 2 mana in red or white. If you do, target creature gains double strike until end of turn. So let's say you're on an open board, or your opponent has like 1 blocker, you have Shuyun, and he doesn't have summoning sickness, so you're like, I'm gonna bolt your creature, I'm gonna pay 2 mana, I now have a 4/3 double strike that's about to beat your face. As early as turn 3 or 4. I like him a lot. He's really good for things that Jeskai wants to do without having the, oh crap, I need to start donating things with Zedru, or oh crap, I'm playing Narset so people are going to kill me anyway, or playing the big dumb dragon from Dargon from a long time ago.
So, Clay, I have a question.
Yes.
How small is Shuyun?
How small is Shuyun?
Yeah.
I would say he's pretty tiny compared to some other legendaries that exist. I think he could probably lead in a tiny army.
So
at a pretty good tempo game.
So okay, so Clay, how do you see him as a tiny leader commander? Because he actually does hit that magical number of 3.
Yes. Up until this point, there hasn't been an actual tiny leader for Jeskai. So because of that, the format has a stipulation that if you want to play, like, Jeskai or Sultai, I think, are the only two.
Mardu.
Mardu, yeah.
Well, Mardu also has a new one now, but for now, if you wanted to play one of those combinations because they didn't have a legendary creature with converted mana cost 3 or less, you could play a stand-in one that literally just cost 1 of each color and was a 2/2, and that was it. So Shuyun fills the bill of being a Jeskai leader, and it seems like he fits perfectly well into the sort of tempo control game that Jeskai would want to play.
So, Christian, what are your thoughts on Shuyun?
I really like him, and when he was first spoiled, I kind of jumped all over him on our local group page, because I really like the Jeskai color combination. Like I said, I've built the Zedru deck before, but I kind of missed the boat on... why is her name escaping me right now? The other one from Cons. Because everybody built her, like, within, you know, 3 or 4 days of
Narset.
Within 3 or 4 days of that set being released and everyone getting their hands on the shiny pre-release cards that were in the pre-release packs or whatever, there were like 4 Narset decks. There was like a Narset Planeswalker deck, there was a Narset like Super Grease Extra Turn deck, there was a Narset Burn deck, and then it was just, I kind of missed the boat on it. I never got a chance to build it, but I've always really liked the color combinations. But as I mentioned earlier, you know, when you're building Zedru, you know what you're in for, right? Like, you're not building a traditional commander deck, and I wanted something that was a little different, a little different from what I had built with Zedru, but kind of more along the lines of, you know, a little bit of burn, a little bit of counter, a little bit of beat. So I'm super pumped about this guy. I'm really looking forward to giving him a try.
So that's also the thing, right? is that the four creatures that we had for Jeskai before, Narset, Numont, Ruhan, Zedru, they were either kind of niche-y or they were seen as dicks. Like, Zedru could go either way, where if you're playing Zedru group hug, okay, yeah, that's fine. Oh, wait, how did he just combo off with Molten Psyche? Ruhan is... Ruhan's all over the place. And Numont and Narset had a reputation as being dickish generals, where everyone would bring Numont back when I played him, and they would go, oh shit, he's gonna blow up our lands, kill him, even though I was playing him just for the colors. And now you've got, Narset's got a reputation of being that super dickish commander that people play when they just want to go time stretch, enter the infinite, omniscience, grape shot for a million, play with myself for like 20 minutes.
Yeah, awful dot deck.
Yeah.
The saltiest of salt chips for Jensen. Yeah.
But this is, I mean, Sun Yun, is probably the best kind of design they could have come up with for a new Jeskai Legendary, because like you said, Will, the other ones, with the other Jeskai commanders, you knew exactly what you were getting, and some of them were dicks, some of them were really good, but there was only, you know, in a lot of sense, there was only one way to play each of those other commanders, unless you were trying to make some, like I said, going group hug or making some crazy goofy deck, you know what you were getting with the other commanders. But with this one, it's kind of interesting, because he's a 3-2 for 3, you know, easily becomes a 4-3, who can, you know, you can give himself double strikes, you can kind of make him a Voltron general, you can play some burn, you can play like a, you know, Jeskai tokens theme with the pros, and then with that other white guy that's in the set that also makes prowess tokens, which is really crazy. And, you know, you can play your big Boros beaters or your big, you know, oh, I'm going to cast an Avacyn and then cast this, like I said, Lightning Bolt, and now she has Double Strike. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of this. I feel like there's a lot of different decks that can come out of this creature, which Jeskai hasn't had before.
Oh, yeah. Like, he, like, feels perfect for putting some sort of Sunforger shell in, because it just gives you free activations of his ability.
Yeah, and one of the most underrated cards in Commander ever, like Sunforger, right? Like, this guy is
amazing.
Oh, then you equip it to him, and he has double strike, and just, oh!
So gross. Yeah, he's like an 8-4 or 8, yeah, oh, disgusting. It's really good. Yeah.
8 with double strike, and whoa! So good. Alright, so that's enough about Shu Yun. Next, so, Christian, do you want to read a Tasker?
Tasker, the Golden Fang. So a little higher costed than the rest of them at 5 colorless and a black. He's a 4/5. He's a legendary creature, human shaman. He has delve, which, has been very interesting, obviously, through cons with treasure crews and stuff like that. And he has, one of the other, wedge abilities. So for 2 colorless and then a hybrid simic, you can put the top 2 cards of your library into your graveyard, then return a non-land card of an opponent's choice from your graveyard to your hand. So, pretty mana efficient and, you know, repeatable graveyard recursion, but with the obvious downside that your opponent gets to choose it. What do you guys think?
Clay?
I think it's a really interesting design, especially if you have, like, the synergy between the fact that he has delve and the second, and his activated ability is really cool, because you get to exile all of the things that you don't want to get back, and try to basically force your opponent to choose the card that you want to get back. The mill too can be fairly relevant, but the problem is you'd have to like make sure that it's like 2 lands or 1 land and a card that you want on the top of your library using something like Divining Top to make sure that you get the most value off of it.
Divining Top did not need to be better.
As much as Graveyard Shenanigans Sidisi wants, I don't think Tasker has a place in my deck, personally. But he has a really cool, unique ability, and I'm sure someone's going to find some way to break him.
Maybe not break him. I see him as a very powerful value engine, because you can kind of selectively build how you want the Graveyard to fall. Because here's the thing. He says non-land card, so you don't have to exile the land card. You don't even have to exile all that much, because you're going to get cards back. Like, the only thing that you would want to be exiling...
He does say draw a card, basically.
Basically, from your graveyard. So people have already been talking about, like, the political ramifications of him. Like, hey, Clay, I've got a Doomblade in my graveyard. It'll help take care of Christian's thing. Eh?
Not my thing. No, not my thing.
Not his Durgan.
Not my Durgan, yeah.
Side note, someone pointed out that Doomblade can be manifested. So now even Doomblade dies to Doomblade.
I saw that.
Yeah?
Dies to Doomblade. 0 out of 10. But, yeah. So, I like that it's a different kind of graveyard-themed deck than something like a Sidisi deck. But, and yet, it's at the same time, you could include it in those similar types of decks. Like, the things that you're not going to want late game when you just want to start drawing cards are going to be like your ramp spells. And let's face it, you're playing the clan that got all of the delve. You just got a Time Walk delve. You have an Ancestral Recall delve. You have, well, I guess Murder's Cut is still a card. But still, you have some absurdly powerful delve stuff to get rid of the stuff that you don't want late game. And even then, if it gets to the point where, you know, you don't really have anything in your graveyard, we have stuff to enable more graveyard shenanigans, sir. Mesmeric Orb is still one of the most hated cards by newer players ever.
Still one of my favorites.
Hence why I said newer. Like, I actually had a game where there was a Mimeoplasm deck on the field, and I'm like, okay, I know I'm feeding the Mimeoplasm player, but this is Sheriff, and maybe he's my deputy, because I happen to be the Sheriff at that point. But you know what happened? He used his Phyrexian Metamorph to copy the Mesmeric Orb, and only then were we actually able to mill out people at the table. It took 2 Mesmeric Orbs to do it.
Got there.
We did, actually. Now, he turned out to be a backstabbing bandit, but that's beside the point.
Never trust a thief.
I like that Tysker has Delve, and it kind of feels like I don't want to say a fixed Carador, because Carador is pretty sweet. He's one of my favorite decks. But at the same time, once you had a good-sized graveyard, you could just always count on casting Carador for 3.
Exactly.
Tysker actually makes you work a bit to get that reduced cost. Yep. So, next up, we have Alicia, who smiles at death. So, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and read her off, because there's something I want to point out with this card. So, she is also quite tiny. She is a 3-2 for 2 and a red. She has First Strike. Whenever Alicia attacks, you can pay hybrid of white-black. If you do, return target creature card with power 2 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield, tapped and attacking. So guys, what is the number one card that you would expect a super competitive deck like this to have in it?
Norn the Wary.
What was that, Christian?
Imperial Recruiter.
I think mine was better.
Hold on, I need to look up Imperial Recruiter.
It's really good, but I think mine was funnier.
Oh, come on. We were going for funny. We were going for competitive.
But you can actually, like, connect with this guy using Alesha.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, so I was going to say Master of Cruelty.
Oh, fair.
It's the exact same combo.
I was thinking Tiny Leaders, but hey.
It is the exact same combo that Kalia had.
Yeah.
Only not as linear, and that's kind of scary.
And repeatable.
And repeatable, that's right. Like, Kalia drops down the Master of Cruelties, that's it. You need some other cards to get that engine going. Alicia, you just need a Phyrexian Tower, or just anything. Get rid of that Cruelty, swing at someone else, boom.
The only problem is, okay, the problem is Alicia targets. If it didn't target, then you could use Phyrexian Tower to pay for it and sacrifice it. But sadly, it does target.
That is disgusting. we are just one wrong templated word from absolute disgustment.
Which is so often the case when you think about it.
It is. Thank you, editing department. Thank you so
much. Like Tybalt, if the words at random were not on that card, he'd actually be amazing.
We don't talk about Tybalt.
We talk about Tybalt all the time. Like,
no, I don't want to talk about Tybalt. He makes me sad.
He's one of the best cards in my Nekuzar deck. And not just because people ignored him, he actually got his second Limit Break off and killed everyone Insurrection style. He also goes well with Possibility Storm when his only job is to cascade into Nicol Bolas.
Yeah, that works too, I guess. But it just, every time someone tells me that they did something cool with Tybalt, it just makes me sad for the human race.
I've killed people with Tybalt before.
Alright, so let's go ahead and go back to Alicia. What do you guys think about her?
She was kind of the one that interested me the most when she was spoiled. I really like the artwork. Obviously, she has a really interesting, you know, name, which is kind of cool. But, I had Kalia built for a while, and I liked it. It was a fun deck. I ended up taking it apart just to build other decks, essentially, because I had, you know, so much good stuff in it. But, I think with this, there's a lot you can do with this general that especially newer players won't notice right off the hop, right? Like, I mean, you look at a card like Revelark, right? When it's like, bring two creatures back with power two or less. And, you know, at first instinct, when you're a new player, you're like, well, power two or less. Like, yeah, you know, what are you going to do with that? But then you get realizing all the ridiculous things you can do with a card like that. So, I mean, I think there's a lot of possibilities for this card. And, I don't think it should be overlooked, especially by newer players or someone that's hoping to get into Commander or Tiny Leaders for that matter. You know, with, Fate Reforged.
I think she's perfectly fine. Like, the best thing about her ability is that if you have creatures that, like, enter with +1/+1 counters, like, let's say in some miracle world you could play Dagatar in an Alesha deck, you could return Dagatar because his power in the graveyard is 0.
So you're
and then
sealed.
He's a 4/4.
So you're sealed deck.
Yeah. If you somehow pulled both of them.
If I get them, I'm gonna do that. Like, I'm just gonna straight up do that. Because yeah. It's just white-red. Like, you could play them both in Mardu. You could do that! That would actually be pretty sweet, because it's white-black-black for Dagatar. And it's, oh my god, that would totally work.
Yeah.
I wanna do that. I hope I get to do that!
And all of the raid guys, that you can bring back with Alesha will trigger immediately. So, like, the ones that enter and bring a dude, the ones that enter and get a +1/+1 counter, the one that enters and makes your opponent discard a card, will all trigger because you've already declared an attack with a creature.
I want to build this deck in Tiny Leaders now.
Yeah. The draft that I have is actually basically Warrior Tribal, with a couple value cards like Tide Hollow Sculler, and I think it could be really strong. She's really cool.
Oh, she is. So,
and next, she smiles at death.
She does.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Actually, it's cool for me, because right now I'm in the middle of reading the Wheel of Time series, and that's exactly what an IEL would say. So, just throwing that out there for anyone else who might actually listen to Wheel of Time. Well, I say, did I just say listen?
You said yes. Listen.
Well, I say that because I'm listening to audiobooks right now, so please. And who wants to do Yasova?
I can do Yasova.
Awesome.
So Yasova Dragonclaw is, as we mentioned earlier, a 4/2 for 3 mana, 2 colorless and a green. She is legendary creature, human warrior. She has trample. At the beginning of combat on your turn, you may pay 1 colorless mana and then 2 of hybrid Izzet mana. And if you do, you gain control of target creature and opponent controls with power less than Yasova Dragonclaw's power until end of turn. Untap that creature, it gains haste until end of turn. So you can Voltron up Yasova and then bring all your opponent's friends to the party.
Pretty much.
I like it, and the artwork's cool too, so I like it. It's a neat card.
Oh, question. Did you guys read the Uncharted Realms this week?
I have not.
Nor have I.
Do you guys care about Darth, it was his sled type spoilers?
Oh, I'm good.
Not really.
Okay. So apparently, Sarkin's following Yasova around after he sees her kill a dragon baby thing, because God Defender Village and all that.
Yes.
And he finds out that Bolas has actually tricked Yasova into tracking the storms that produce dragons, because that's how he's going to find Ugin to kill him. It felt like an actual revelation, because I just couldn't... You don't get to see, like, the marks that she's carving in the trees and stuff. And, like, she is the hardest of hard asses. Like, like, we're not talking, like, cracking down on rules or all that, but, like, this is a woman who fights dragons on a daily basis. Like, she is the baddest of badasses. And I am looking forward to our Entourage next week, a little bit of a spoiler for that, to try and come up with some interesting deck ideas for her. This is also something that we'll talk about next week when we do our teamer episode, but correct me if I'm wrong. Actually, hold on. Let me pull up the legends real quick. Legendary creature for teamer.
It's,
Animar, Intet, Malsham Wanderer, Riku, and Serac.
Yes.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but couldn't you just, like, put all of them into the same deck? Like, not
for
even-
For the most part. Like, for example, my friend built a, like, value cheap big dudes into play deck using Intet that always kind of, like, dirtled around. But when Serac came out, he put Intet into the 99 and put Serac at the helm, and it's, like, 600 times more consistent.
Nice.
Which is interesting, And yet, I, for the most part, it feels like a lot of these generals are interchangeable. I mean, they do different things. Like, Animar is incredibly cheaty with his cheating converted mana cost. But, like, you get similar value engine decks if you were to build, like, Astromander or Riku.
Tiny converted mana cost?
Oh, come on.
It's gonna be a thing. Animar Tribal Hydra. There we go. Comes back. Only Gadgets can save us. But yeah, like, all of the current team of generals are just kind of generic enough that you could literally build the same deck and have them be the general to varying degrees of success. The only exception that I would make would be like the Malshan Wanderer, where you actually don't want counter spells in it, right? Mm-hmm. But Yasova, like I said earlier, she's one of those you've really got to build around her to really justify using her at the head of your deck. And that's what I'm most excited about with her.
Mm-hmm.
Alright, so anything else on the cons before we move on to Durgans?
I think they're all really cool. The only sad part is that they're all human.
I really wish Tyskar had been a cat demon. Don't tell me I'm wrong. Like that.
No, I'm not gonna tell you. You're wrong.
Cat demon, legendary cat demon. It's gotta happen in Durgans of Tarkir. All right.
Oh my gosh, Tessiger is holding a whip and he's in black. Oh my gosh.
It was
Tessiger for Erebos confirmed.
It's awesome because Chewie called it Sidisi's whip, but then he's like, wait, no, that's the deck. And it took him a minute to remember that the whip was actually from Theros, just because the whip is everywhere. Good times.
Good times.
All right, so we're going to talk about some Durgans.
Durgans.
Okay, so our first one is going to be Ojutai, Soul of Winter. Who wants this one?
Ooh, I like this one. Okay, I'll do it.
All right.
So for 5 white blue, you get a 5/6 legendary creature dragon with flying and vigilance. So he's pretty fairly costed for that. 7 mana, 5/6 evasion and blocking potential with a fairly sizable ass.
Mm-hmm.
But whenever a dragon you control attacks, tap target non-land permanent and opponent controls.
Would you say she has an ass of titanic proportions?
It's fairly big, but it's not as good as one of the others. However, if tapping down an opponent's permanent wasn't enough, that permanent also doesn't untap during its controller's next untap step.
Titan-sized ass! Come on, Tim! These are the jokes!
So, yes. All of your dragons are Frost Titan, basically.
Which isn't a bad thing.
No, it's actually incredibly powerful. The only downside is that she costs a whopping 7 mana, but I think it's completely justified.
I mean, she's got flying, she's got vigilance, her ability's gonna stack for other Durgans. If you get that siege down and you clear the 2 ability, she's pretty much gonna be a Frost Titan.
All of your dragons will be Frost Titan.
Pretty much, like, wow. Durgans. Yes. The only question I need to figure out is this, do I want to put this into my Lavinia Blink deck to move her towards more control, or am I just going to put her in Derevi and just enjoy more high-flying, feathery things?
I think Derevi.
I think Derevi.
Yeah, Derevi.
So, what do you think, Christian?
I like it. It's a different. The 5 power with the big body is really strong, and, you know, especially in those colors in white and blue where you could potentially be going on the control path, I mean, you can't underestimate, you know, tapping down your opponent's resources and not, you know, having them untap during their next attack step, right? Like what Clay said, 7 mana in 2 colors, I mean, that don't typically have a lot of the ramp built in is a little tough. But I like it. It's a nice finisher and, you know, a potential big body for those colors that, you know, often wants to do different things. So I like it.
Yeah. So, and here's the other thing though, is that it says target non-land permanent. So we can't be super mean with this.
You're right. I mean, you know, by tapping down resources, I meant your soul rings and your Thran dynamos and stuff like that. You're right.
Or
you're
not tapping creatures. Down, you know.
Well, I mean,
big creatures, right?
No, I'm so, just yeah, saying, exactly. Like, if it didn't have that non-land clause, this thing was going to get super mean.
Oh, exactly.
Like, forget the fact that white-blue doesn't actually have a whole lot of viable dragons. The fact that you're giving any number of dragons the ability to Frost Titan lands means that enough Durgans turns this into a Winter Orb.
Yeah, for exactly. And then with Yosei and a Sack effect, all of a sudden your opponents don't have turns anymore. Who wants that?
True. All right, so, Christian, why don't you go ahead and read us off Slumgar?
Salumgar, the Drifting Death, is the Dimir dragon, and I know I was a little hard on him earlier, and yes, Vela does not mill, but it is nice to see a different style in Dimir. But anyway, long story short, she is a 6-mana-costed 3/7, mana cost is 4 colorless, a blue and a black, legendary creature Durgan, with flying and hexproof. Whenever a dragon you control attacks, creature's defending player controls gets -1/-1 till end of turn. So, interesting, from what I've been catching online and on Twitter and stuff, she's taken a lot of flack for the only -1/-1, you know, seeming a bit unpowered when you got Drowned in Sorrow and your Mutilates and your Black Sun Zenas, but I'm still sticking to my point that it is nice to see a Dimir, aligned legendary creature that is doing something different, which is cool. So, what do you guys think?
Let's also not forget that she is a 3/7 hexproof.
Yeah.
Yeah, this thing is 3/7 is crazy. You're right, it's not gonna die. I wish 3 power, I wish I had a little bit more, especially for 6 mana, but I guess it is what it is.
I think it's perfectly fine and easily one of the more powerful dragons we've seen out of recent sets. Granted, they are legendary, so they're gonna be a bit more powerful, but you stick this thing into any sort of dragon tribal and you just start wiping your opponent's boards every combat step.
You can go Krosis and play Grixis Dragons.
Sadly it's not in standard anymore, but if it were in standard alongside Mutavault, you would see this in 4 of Mutavault in control.
Oh my god, you're right.
You're absolutely right. Absolutely. And I will not argue that point.
Don't forget about the changelings.
Yeah.
You
also have those.
You build Ajata with changelings, like all those cheap changelings, and you can do changeling token, mirror entity, and Ajata to lock down people's.
I was gonna say mirror entity, but you were getting really excited, Will, so I figured I'd just back down a little bit.
entity is amazing.
These dragons just got super disgusting.
These legendary dragons make me want to build Cyan Dragon Tribal and have it legitimately Dragon Tribal.
I think they're all balloons. This is so disgusting.
Did I break your brain, Will?
The changelings.
One last thing about Silumgar. I love her dopey grin. She kind of looks like, from what I'm looking at her, I can't tell if those are like fangs or not, so that she kind of looks like a vampire dragon or whatever. But she kind of has like that bulldog look where she's got that underbite. She's just kind of grinning at you like, hi, can I have a hug?
Oh, sorry, your guys are dead.
Just like my dog. Mm-hmm. Alrighty then. So, we're going to go on to Kolaghan, the Storm's Fury. Who wants Kolaghan?
But I just read Sogmar.
Alright.
Your turn, Will.
I wanted to save it for... Okay, you know what? I'll take this one, but I'm getting the Gruul Dragon. So, Kolaghan, the Storm's Fury. You can, for 3 black-red, cast a 4/5 Flying Dragon that says whenever a dragon you control attacks, creatures you control get 1/0 until end of turn. Or, for 3 black-red, you can cast it for its dash cost. That's right, Kolaghan's got the new Mardu mechanic, where you can cast the creature for different costs. She'll have haste, but at the end of the turn she'll go back to your hand and avoid the massive board wipes that seem to wreck just creature-based decks. On the one hand, I'm not really a big fan of her clown lipstick. That's what it looks like to me.
Jeez, you're being awful harsh on people's appearances tonight, I'm just saying.
Well, this is a podcast, so we're just leaving it to the listeners' imaginations anyway. But, you know, the Mardu dragons are super sweet. Like, they got the 4-winged feather style that I think is just boss.
It's cool,
and
yeah.
It's got, like, lightning everywhere. Like, you almost expect that black to be blue, and this is actually an Izzet card. But no, it's just pure cold Storm of Death. Because let's be real here. If you're playing black-red, then you're playing a super aggressive deck. And if you're playing a super aggressive deck, then you have a lot of the lower costing dragons, probably. Like, you've got Tauros the Blade Ring, you've got Thunder Maw, maybe a Storm Breath. And now each of those dragons are triggering for Kolaghan, and... Now,
they all have Battlecry.
Yeah, they all have Battlecry.
That also pumps themselves.
That's exactly right. Like, you go with this with Idvar Hellkite, and it's more disgustingness. It is completely disgusting, and I am in love with just all of these Durgans.
Oh, Durgans.
A lot of cool Durgans.
And now, if you want to see another way to make Colligan ridiculous, wait until you see the next one, and then if you put them together.
Which no, I, don't talk crazy.
Arthas will have all of the things.
All the things.
Okay, so real quick, Christian, what do you think about Colligan?
I like it. I like the pump that I think can be relevant in the right deck. And again, the art style on it is amazing with the lightning and the four wings and everything. And I like that it does have the, I really like the dash mechanic. I don't really know why I like it yet, but I find it very interesting. And I think there's some potential there for some crazy things to happen. So I like that we have a dragon option, a legendary dragon option with this mechanic. So no, I'm all for it.
Yeah. I was actually kind of disappointed that not all of the Durgans had like, the clan mechanic, because I thought I had read somewhere that they all would be tied into their clan mechanic.
Right.
Yeah, and then, like, Kalagan's there, and the Dromoka gets spun, and it seems like that's confirmed, but Silumgar and Ojada don't really do that. But neither does Atarka, and she doesn't really need to. She gives no fucks. Atarka, World Renderer! For 5 red green, that's 7 mana, you get a 6/4. Well, I'm not that excited about it. I mean, like, she has cool antlers and stuff. She's like a deer dragon or something. Elmer dragon, I don't know. But 7 mana for a 6/4, and that's not really that great. Oh, wait! She's a Durgan with flying, trample, and whenever a Durgan you control attacks, it gains double strike until end of turn. So, let me get this straight. I play the Durgan. I play either Xenagod, Furnace of Wrath, or Dictate the Twin Gods, or anything that doubles damage, and she just one-shots people?
Yep.
For 7 mana?
Yeah.
That's all I have to pay? I can have Hammer of Purphoros out already and give her haste, or anger in the graveyard, or just...
Or Xenagod.
Or Xenagod.
She's going right into Xenagos, right
so,
there.
Flying, trample, double striking, double 12, 10, wow. That is a mighty Durgan. So, how do you guys like her? How do you feel about the fact that we have a card that's essentially a one-shot if she's the commander?
This is the dragon I was waiting for when they started spoiling the series, and I mean, I wasn't even looking for a dragon commander, because I'm not kind of looking to build a new deck right now unless something really jumps out at me, but no, this, I knew there was going to be a big dragon, it was going to be red-green, it was going to be perfect for Xenagos, so I'm just like, just make it have a lot of power. I don't care about if it's, it could be a 7-1 for all I care. I just wanted to take advantage of that plus X that Xenagos gives, and then it was spoiled, and I was like, hey, the artwork's really cool, and she's got like these antler things, and she's all big, and then I was like, oh, look, there's Double Strike, and it was just like, that's fantastic, because I mean, I played Xenagos as early as turn 2 before, so playing her on turn 3 or 4 isn't a big deal. And then all of a sudden she becomes a 12-10 double striker without any other
with
pump.
With trample?
No, with, yes, it's just...
And flying.
I mean, if there's one card that could make me, you know, if I'm tutoring in Xenagos, my first choice is typically Hydra Omnivore for the, you know, game-ending potential. But if there's a card that could make me not go for that first, it might possibly be this one. Like, I love this card. And the fact that it's pre-ordering at 99 cents, I'm pretty sure I can pick one up at pre-release weekend. So I would like to get a foil, but I should be able to get a hold of one pretty early and jam it in there. So very pumped about that.
Actually, that's an interesting point, is that none of the legendary creatures are in Mythic this time. They're all at Rare.
That's right.
Like, all of these cards should be accessible unless one turns out to be a standard powerhouse. And let's face it, they're all junk rares right now. And I
exactly.
say that in quotations. Like, commander players are not going to have a hard time getting these. I'm not going to have a hard time getting, like, 2 or 3 of these just to pick up for decks.
Yeah, and even the ones that, you know, ones that I'm not particularly interested, like Solgamar or, you know, the blue-white one right now. I mean, you could probably still pick up their foils for a couple bucks, and I mean, who doesn't like foil dragons, so why wouldn't you, you know what I mean? So.
Oh my god, well, if Tarka's foil is that her antlers are highlighted, I need to get that.
Don't get me excited about it yet, just let me wait till the pre-release.
So, Clay, we haven't heard you about Tarka yet.
I think it's kind of bonkers. Like, 6/4 flying trample double strike on its own is great, but anything that can give other things double strike is incredible. Especially when you are considering it in the context of, like, Sign of the Ur-Dragon or Karthus, where you're playing a lot of dragons anyway, or your commander can become Atarka out of the deck. Like, it's just another way for Scion to be able to one-shot people. Like, you activate the ability twice, find Molten Steel Dragon, pump it up to 11 power, turn it into Artarka, and yeah, it just kills people.
I really want to see the Durgans.
Oh, the Durgans.
We got one more Durgan.
Yep. Her name is Dromoka, the Eternal. She has the... She's tied with Kalagan for the lowest mana cost of all of these ones. She costs 5, 3 a green and a white. Unlike Kalagan, she's a full 5-5. But whenever a dragon you control attacks, you bolster 2. And for those who are somehow out of the loop or didn't get to play the pre-release, because I'm speaking in time travel terms as if we are talking from next week when this is posted... So bolster is the new Abzan mechanic, and when you bolster, you choose a creature among the creatures you control with the least toughness, and you put that many +1/+1 counters on it. So if Dromoka is the only creature you control, and she attacks, she gets 2+1/+1 counters and becomes a 7/7. If you have a Dromoka and a Mutavault, you're gonna bolster 2 twice, and your Mutavault's gonna end up a 5/5 at the end of it.
And if you have Dromoka and Mirror Enemy out, you have won the game.
Then all of your dudes will end up getting 2+1/+1 counters on them eventually.
Durgans.
Because Bolster will check when the trigger resolves. So, like, if you have a 3-3 and a Dromoka, and you attack with both, and the 3-3 is a dragon, then you'll Bolster 2 once, the 3-3 will become a 5-5, and then you have 2 with 5 toughness, and you just choose one and put more counters on it.
So, let me ask you guys. Do you see her as more of a Voltron general? Like, there's Changeling shenanigans, but she feels more Voltron-y to me.
Yeah, because pumping herself or pumping other dudes, I feel like she goes along with Anafenza and the fact that it can make your other dudes more powerful with Anafenza's ability to, like, put +1/+1 counters on tapped creatures in that sort of sense.
Yeah, I like her with Anafenza. You know, obviously there's a big casting cost difference between the two of them, so, you know, you'd have to find the right balance of ramp and when to play her, when to get her going, but, she definitely could work there for sure.
So, yeah, I definitely need to find room for Dromoka in my Sigarda deck, because she'll be able to pump up the enchantresses, and let me tell you, there's nothing nicer than being able to survive an Elish Norn board wipe.
Yeah.
Sounds all right.
All right. And those are our Durgans of Fate Before. And some people, too, I guess. But mostly some Durgans.
Humans.
So, that's our 10 brand new Legendary Commanders. I've got at least 2 that I'm going to be trying out after I get my hands on them. But you know what? We have other cards besides Legendaries to talk about. So coming up in our technology segment, we're going to talk about our anticipated cards of Fate Before. Stay tuned, everyone. We'll be right back. I did not pick out cards. Oh well. We're just gonna do this. We'll just wean it. It'll be okay.
Yep.
I need to pick out a card, damn it.
I can start if you want me to.
Go ahead, Clay. You know what? I'm going to go. I know which one.
You need to introduce the segment, though.
I do need to introduce the segment. I'm going to introduce the segment.
Go for it.
Get her done.
So, to go ahead and wrap up what's been a very good night so far, we are going to go ahead and wish Juan Cassidy Silver happy birthday! Yeah, but you didn't see that coming. Yeah,
out of nowhere.
Yeah, this episode actually comes out on Cassidy Silver's birthday, the 19th. Who would have thought about that? Thank you, Calvin, for reminding me. So take that, Cassidy. You just got surprise birthday.
I'm sure he's very happy about it.
I hope he's playing this like on the speakers over his store. Oh, that'd be just the best. Okay, so for real this time. So, in a our technology segment today, we are going to go ahead and talk about our most anticipated cards for Cons of Tarkir. And
Fate Reforged?
Time travel's weird.
Yeah, I was really confused there for a minute. I think we hit a...
Fate Reforged! Yeah! Durgans!
Yeah, Durgans!
So, I'm going to be a cheaty face, and I'm going to mention just a whole cycle of cards that I'm excited to see. And I'm talking about the Siege Cycle. We've got Citadel Siege, Monastery Siege, Palace Siege, Outpost Siege, and Frontier Siege. What do they do? It doesn't matter! Because they could do anything you want them to do. That is to say, they each come with a choice that you have to make. Cons or dragons? Cons will give you one effect, dragons will give you the other. Which one am I most excited to see specifically?
Monastery Siege.
No, but that is a good question. But is that the one you're most excited for?
Oh, yeah.
Christian, which one are you?
I like the Monastery one, too. I also like Citadel, but that's just because it would fit into one of my decks that I really like, right? But, and honestly, in my opinion, they're all excellent because in a multiplayer game, the best thing you can have is choices. So the fact that you can play these and get a choice out of them is I love it. And I love being able to adapt to the game, not just the type of deck that you're building.
Oh, yeah. And my favorite is Frontier Siege. For 4 mana, you get an enchantment that either says when a creature with flying enters the field, it can fight a creature you don't control, which, who would have thought, it's good for Durgans. And also bees.
Lots and of bees.
And bees.
So many bees.
Oh my god.
Oh man, I just realized that. Holy crap.
That's gonna be a thing in standard, because if you don't have bees, then you can just play it on turn 3 or 4 and do the cons thing where it says at the beginning of each of your main phases, that's 1 and 2, add double green to your mana pool.
And then just cast the bees.
Yeah!
You're getting bees either way.
Cast a second Frontier Siege and then cast the bees.
See, that's just, you're crazy. Don't talk like that. You're crazy.
Main phase 1, play Frontier Siege. Main phase 2, get 2 of your mana back.
Yeah. Stupid bees.
If it wasn't for the bees, we might actually see dragons being played standard that aren't Stormbreath or Sarkhan. Oh well. This is Commander Cast. I don't care about standard.
Yeah.
So, let's go ahead and keep this going. So, Clay?
I'm going to eschew all of the obvious rares and mythics for a common that I'm particularly excited about. Grim Contest. 1, black, green, instant. Choose target creature you control and target creature an opponent controls. Each of those creatures deals damage equal to its toughness to the other. So it's fighting with toughness. As someone who is a longtime admirer of Doran, this is incredible.
Butt fight!
Yeah, basically. They booty bomb.
There are so many amazing alters you could get for this. What's great is that with black green, you can already deal with all the things. This is a card that you strictly should not be playing, but the fact that it's a butt fight means that you have to play it.
But, like, the traditional Doran deck is a lot of dudes with, like, 1 power, but, like, 4 or 5 or 6 toughness. And
the
this Grizzled is just, like,
Leotau.
And this is just, like, I'm going to capitalize on that and kill your guy. And then swing in with my guy.
I mean, if you're playing Sultai, it means Silumgar can hit someone for 7.
Yeah, that too.
All right, then. So, Christian.
I wish that I could go with the not obvious common or uncommon like Clay did, because my favorite card from cons for Commander was Burnaway, which has done so much work for me, it's ridiculous. But I am going to have to go with actually a mythic in Monastery Mentor, only because I already have a deck that just needs this card and wants this card so badly. But Monastery Mentor is a human monk creature. It's 2 colorless mana and 1 white mana for a 2/2 body with prowess, and whenever you cast a non-creature spell, put a 1/1 white monk creature token with prowess onto the battlefield. So, like I said, I play Ghost Council of Orzhova. It's one of my very frequently played deck. I really like it. And the fact that I can play this guy, or have this guy in play, cast Grave Pact, get a 1/1 token for casting said Grave Pact, and then sack the token to Ghost Council to start the creature killing shenanigans. I think this is fantastic, and I love this card, and I want this card. My problem with that is that I think it's going to see heavy standard play, and it'll probably be expensive, so I'm hoping to pick one up fairly soon.
$20-ish dollars.
Yeah, exactly, right? You're like, ugh.
So. Like, 20's kind of pushing that limit for me, personally.
Yeah, for sure. But, you know, for a different choice, I mean, Shamanic Revelation, which is the buy box promo, so you should be able to get your hands on it fairly easy. It's also a really cool card, especially if you're playing green, because card draw in green is never a bad thing, and card draw with life gain in green, and I mean, let's face it, if you're playing green, you probably have Ferocious turned on most of the time. You know, four life for a creature you control is pretty cool. So, yeah.
It's good. Yeah, like it's just a strictly better collective unconscious, right?
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
Costs less, and it has the potential to just get you life.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, but no, on that Monastery Mentor, no, it's a great card. It comes down on three, so you can get it back with Sun Titan. And I can still play it in my Narsei equipment deck, because one, casting equipment is going to trigger the prowess on all these guys. And two, even if they kill one guy, then I'll still have tokens left to suit up with other stuff.
For sure. And again, the power two or less thing, which, you know, so many good effects can get back. You know what I mean? So
like Alyssa who smiles at death?
Exactly. So,
oh
yeah,
my God, that's going to be a thing in Standard.
Yeah, and exactly. And that's why it's going to be a thing in Standard. So, no, I like the card. I like the potential for it. I like that the tokens have prowess, which is kind of cool because you don't often see tokens with abilities outside of, like, trample or flying or something like that. So, no, I'm very excited for the card.
All right. So, next card I'm going to be super excited about is one that's... So, a bit of context. I like to play white-red-ish, white-blue kind of strategies. My sister likes to play blue-red a lot. Like, she's just full-on, is it? So when Soulfire Grandmaster got spoiled, I sent her the picture, and I told her that it's like my deck and her deck got left at the Pokemon Daycare Center together, and when we came back, we don't know how the egg got there, but we have an egg now, and this is what came out of it. We have a bear, a 2-2 for 2, that happens to be white, lifelink, instant and sorcery spells you control have lifelink. This made me do a double take.
Yeah.
This, like... This just, giving instant and sorceries keywords like lifelink just wasn't a thing that Magic did, but apparently it did over 1,000 years ago. But not only that, but two, and hybrid for is it, next time you cast an instant or sorcery spell from your hand this turn, put that card into your hand instead of into your graveyard as it resolves. So if they can't counter your lightning bolt, then you have a Lightning Helix with buyback for 5 mana total.
This is where you insert your time travel is weird soundbite, because this card is silly.
It's
this card
silly,
is absolutely insane.
And I'm afraid of how expensive it might be if this catches on in Modern.
Yeah.
Like, they're already playing stuff like Snapcaster and all that to get another use out of their Lightning Helixes and bolts. Like, Lightning Helix becomes a deal 3, gain 6. For 2 mana with this thing out. Like, what control deck doesn't want that?
Imagine this with a Blasphemous Act. Or even better, a Miracle Bonfire of the Damned.
Well then.
A lot of really stupid things you can do with this card just to gain a
chain reaction?
Ton of life. Yeah, chain reaction too. And then if you make your Grandmaster indestructible...
So,
on top of that,
I need this card desperately.
I think we all need, like, 6 of this card.
Yes. And last time I checked, at least in face-to-face up here at facefacegames.com up here in Canada, it was, I think it was the highest priced pre-sale card as of a couple days ago. So, yeah, I think people are expecting it to be big, and, you know, there's no indication that's, you know, saying it's not going to be big, so.
It's one of the few downsides to having everything be awesome in a set.
Yep.
Alright, so, Clay, what's another card you like?
Oh, man. Let's see. On my Nin Tiny Leaders pick, I'm gonna say Scroll of the Masters, and going on our little, apparently, Jeskai Fun Fest that we're doing. It's a 2-mana artifact. Whenever you cast a non-creature spell, put a lore counter on Scroll of the Masters. 3, tap, target creature you control gets +1/+1 for each, until end of turn, for each lore counter on Scroll of the Masters. So it's kind of like a mix between Rune Chanter's Pike and Sphinx Bone Wand, and it just kind of functions as a second Rune Chanter's Pike, but it just gives you value for doing what your deck already does, so when you finally land a threat like True Name Nemesis, you can just make it really big.
It's a scroll.
Yes.
It's going to be super busted in Storm decks, isn't it?
Potentially. It depends on how it wins.
Potentially. I don't know how I feel about this card. Christian, how do you feel about this card?
I've committed to picking up a copy to test in my Tibor and Lumia deck for the exact same reason that you just mentioned, because Tibor and Lumia, they have the crazy epic experiment, what I call combo, but it actually takes like six cards to pull off. And it's kind of my goofy deck. I wrote about it on the website this past week. It's just kind of, you know, it's a fun deck, and it either Voltrons Tibor and Lumia up, or it goes for this crazy, you know, one shot kill the table combo that takes like seven cards to do. But regardless, the deck plays both Sphinx Bone Wand, pardon me, and Runechander Spike. So I thought, you know, for two mana, this kind of jams both of them together. So I'm going to find a slot for it in the deck. I don't know where I'm going to find a slot for it, but I think in the right deck, again, because it's non-creature, it opens up, you know, a lot of possibilities. If it was just instant or sorcery, then you'd be like, yeah, you know, it's not bad, right? But non-creature, you get that many more chances to put lore counters on it and that much more, you know, opportunity to make it bigger so that, you know, left unchecked, you know, which is the downfall of every inexperienced commander player, you know, that's just a little rinky-dink artifact. It's not going to do any damage. And then, like you said, Storm or something like that goes off, and all of a sudden this thing's got, you know, six, seven counters on it, and for three mana, you're, you know, swinging with 10-10s, right? So, you know, I'm gonna try it. And, you know, the art's kind of cool. I know I always come back to that, but I like the artwork on the cards. So, I mean, if it's got a cool picture, I'll give it a second look. And this kind of has something for me, one of my decks that I need, and or what I would like, pardon me, and some cool art. So I like it.
All right, so Christian, next card.
I'm going to go with Hero's Blade. It's an uncommon, which is really cool. It's a artifact for two colorless mana. Equipped creature gets +3/+2, and whenever a legendary creature enters the battlefield under your control, you may attach Hero's Blade to it, and its regular equip cost is 4. It also has completely badass flavor text in "The best swords are forged with Dragonfire." The reason I like it is very personal to myself. Like I mentioned earlier, my 1v1 deck and one of my favorite cards in Magic is Izumaru. So the fact that I could recast Izumaru for 3 mana after he's been killed and he comes back as a 5/4 is pretty cool. So that's why I like this card. It's got some cool art too, some great flavor text, and I think you know, because we do some budget lists and stuff at East Coast Commander, we do some lists and stuff in them, and there's a lot of younger kids that are in my local game store. We recently moved our Commander night from Tuesday night to Friday night, so it links up with F&M. So I've been having a lot of, like, you know, getting people into the game conversations and, like, budget conversations lately. So I really think, like, as a budget card and as, you know, because obviously if you're trying to get someone into Commander, one of the easier, and I'm not trying to take this away from Voltron players, one of the easier decks to play is, or build and play for your first deck is Voltron, right? You pick a card you like, creature you like, and you throw a bunch of stuff on it, and you just swing with it, right? So, you know, from that point of view, getting new people into the game, this is a fantastic budget option for any new Commander player, and in the right deck, you know, if you're recasting your Commander a lot, Izumaru, Thalia, you know, I always play white, so people always, you know, so people always say, oh, you're playing white, you must be playing, you know, Christian's playing white all the time. So I like this card. It stood out to me right away, and those small legendary creatures, those small white weenie beaters, this card is, like, perfect for that.
So, Clay.
I like this card a lot. I know several decks that it can go in already. My roommate has a Norn the Wary deck, where one of the ways that he kills people is with, Pandemonium or Warstorm Surge, with Norn coming in and out constantly, and he plays, like, Scythe the Shinobi, Ronin War Club, things that automatically equip to bump its power up to deal more damage. Hero's Blade instantly fills that role. Any sort of cheap Voltron deck definitely wants to play this card just because it's sheer value. The only thing I don't like is just how high the equip cost is when it's not automatically attaching. But you can also play it with, like, Yasova. Like, you drop the sword turn 2, turn 3 you play Yasova, equip it, turn 4 you steal literally any of your opponent's creatures and smack them with it.
I smell some tech for next week's Entourage.
Yep.
Yeah, when you sort of first came out, the obvious choice was like your Loxodon Warhammers and stuff to get her power up as high as possible, as cheaply as possible. Mm-hmm. But then when you see this, that comes down a turn before you, Sova, and automatically equips, it's like, okay, well, that solves that problem, right? Like,
so, Clay,
mm-hmm.
This sword is also kind of small.
Yes, it is quite small. I do not believe it will be a problem to the smaller format. I think it's really good for the decks that it goes in, but it's not at all means broken like some other equipment I know.
Do you think jitty jitty bang bang?
Yeah, I think Jitty's banned in Tiny Leaders.
It is.
It sure is. Yep.
So, do you see it as being like a nice budget option for those decks then?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Like a Thalia, you can play Hero's Blade, then you can drop Thalia in the next turn. She's a 5/3 first striker.
Like. As I said, the only problem that I have with it is the fact that the equip cost is an entire 4 mana, so that if you want to, like, equip one of your other creatures with it, it takes a bit more resource commitment.
Turns Breemass into a 6/6?
But the decks that want to play it will really benefit from it.
Geist becomes a 5/4?
Yeah, that's the part I'm not excited about.
Yeah.
Not excited Geist. About a 5/4 Geist?
I'm not excited about Geist getting its hands on this card.
That's legit. I mean, but it's also an uncommon, so you're not going to have a hard time getting this if you want one.
Nope.
Yeah. It's cheap. It's effective. It does what Voltron wants to do.
All right. So, guys, there's kind of a big dragon elephant in the room.
Yeah.
Kinda.
I mean, he's pretty big. Makes teacups look very tiny unless they're drawn to proportion.
I think I know which elephant you're talking about.
Good. So let's not mention it.
Sure.
Okay, that joke doesn't quite work out. But it's Ugin, the spirit dragon!
Oh, not Sandstep Mastodon.
Wait, what?
Sandstep Mastodon.
Oh, the actual elephant.
The guy that's super awesome in Blinky decks.
No, we're not talking about him.
Ah, but he comes down as a 10/10 if he's the only creature you have.
No, he might be in the room, but we're not talking about him.
Okay, let's give the dead dragon some credit.
Yeah, so 8 mana planeswalker.
Literally just 8 mana, 8 colorless mana.
Yeah, so he's a ghost flame, and a board wipe, and a limit break, and Christian, this is going straight into super fans, isn't he?
Oh, most definitely. Mostly because of the negative X ability, because exile, as we all know, is always huge in Commander, because there's so many ways to abuse graveyards, so whenever you can get stuff totally off the table, fantastic. I love it.
I'm trying to decide if he's better or almost as good as Karn.
I think Karn is more inevitable for the win, but Ugin does more work like removing threats. I've heard of people in, like, green-red Tron, like, running them 2/2, but the problem is Ugin's ultimate doesn't just win the game like Karn's does.
Yeah, I don't actually play Karn in the Angus McKenzie deck, mostly because they don't have one. I'm attempting to get one a hold of one for my cube right now, and then I'll slide, if I can get a hold of one, I'll slide him in Angus and test him out. But Karn, yeah, Karn's funny, like, I've never had a good experience playing against Karn, and I guess you're not supposed to, but this Ugin seems like he's got more, you drop him and you use his ability that you need to answer the threat that is currently presenting itself in front of you, right? Where Karn, you just kind of go through the motions to build up and build up and build up, and then, hey, let's restart the game and I'm going to take all your shit, you know what I mean? So.
Well, see,
I like Ugin.
That's even the thing with Karn though, is that I found that whenever I've gotten Karn on the field and I've had like the lead, I don't even need to use his limit break. I can just keep plussing him, and I just keep eating stuff out of my opponent's hands.
Exactly, yeah. And then, so, I mean, I guess that is one obvious advantage to Karn. But I don't know. For me, the Planeswalkers were always, as a Planeswalker, as a type of card, as a type of spell, were always, you know, use the resources that you have, but ultimately you want to build up to that ultimate. So I guess that's why I was never really, I know Karn Liberated is a very powerful card, but I was never overly satisfied with it. But Ugin, I think at 8 colorless mana and 7 loyalty and he can ultimate after 2 turns, I think, I like it. You know, it's a different card and he has different answers on each of his abilities, which I like. Cause again, I like the versatility. That's why I like the Citadel, you know, the siege cards, right? So, yeah.
I'm looking forward to the day where I have enough mana to drop Ugin, activate and copy my Contagion Engine and ult him immediately. And then if I had some way to bounce him to my hand in response to the ultimate, that would be really freaking hilarious.
Alright, so let's go ahead and one more round since we don't have a mark with us. Clay.
Oh gosh, no, I have to go find one. Let's see. I'm going to say Jeskai Infiltrator for 2 and a blue. You get a 2/3 human monk. He can't be blocked as long as you control no other creatures. When it deals combat damage to a player, you exile both it and the top card of your library face down, shuffle that pile, and then manifest both cards. So basically, it hits an opponent, you flip it face down, you take the top card of your library and play it as a 2/2, but you shuffle them together so that your opponent doesn't know which one the infiltrator is. And so the next turn, if they block the wrong creature, you flip the infiltrator face up and you do it again. It's just a really big bluffing game, and it's kind of really cool.
Where it's round and round they go. Which one's the infiltrator? Nobody knows. Except the controlling player.
Because you get to look at them.
Alright, so I guess if no one has anything to say about the infiltrator, Christian.
For one more, I would like to bring up Humble Defector, which I think is kind of cool. I'm not a group hug player. I've never built a group hug deck, but for Humble Defector is a creature human rogue. It's 2 mana, 1 colorless and 1 red, 2/1 body, and has the ability of tap, draw 2 cards. Target opponent gains control of Humble Defector. Activate this ability only during your turn. So obviously there's some limitations to it, and you know, you're drawing 2 cards for free, but then you have to give this card away. And like I said, I've never been a big group hug guy, but I always have thoroughly enjoyed the politics of Commander. You know, helping somebody out to save your own ass for a few turns, or, you know, bargaining to gain up on the person that's about to combo off or something like that. So I know Red doesn't have a lot of options for, you know, the politics like this, so I really like this card. I think the artwork's kind of cool on it, and I just think, you know, drop it. You know, your hand's getting a little low, you let it sit there for a bit, your hand gets low, tap it, draws 2 cards, and then say, hey, I will target you as the opponent, but, you know, don't send your guys at me for a few turns, right? I mean, politics, I find, is always an underrated part of our game, so I like that mono red, or red in general, is getting a card where, you know, you can get some value from yourself, and then you can give it away to get, you know, to give an opponent some value, but maybe get some help down the line for yourself. I like those cards, so I like this card in turn.
What's in Claire?
I think it's cute. I think it goes really well with Zedru. Yeah.
See, that's a weird thing, too, is that we have a local Zedru player who actually wouldn't be putting this into his deck. Like, we asked him about it, he's not putting it in there.
It's also hilarious with Homeward Path.
Yeah.
Because you make it defect, and then you just pull it right back before anyone else can activate it.
All right, then. So, we have gone through all our cards. I did want to make an honorable mention, though, to Soul Flare, because this is one of those other cards that made me do a triple take. Like, I read it, and then I went, buh? And I read it again, I was like, buh? So, for 4 black-black, you get a 4/4 Demon with Delve. That says, if a creature card with flying was exiled with Soul Flare's Delve ability, Soul Flare has flying. The same is true for First Strike, Double Strike, Death Touch, Haste, Hexproof, Indestructible, Lifelink, Reach, Trample, and Vigilance. So, this is the ultimate build a demon? Like, you just exile a chroma as one of them, and you automatically have, like, 5 of these?
You have an chroma.
Yeah! You have an chroma without the protection. But that's fine, because you can just exile Avacyn, too, and that takes care of it. You just exile a chroma, Avacyn, and Sigarda, and now they can't do anything to it.
It's basically Cairn Wanderer 2.0. If anyone doesn't know what Cairn Wanderer is, it's a changeling from back in Lorwyn. And it has a similar ability. It costs 4 and a black, it's a 4/4. As long as a creature card with flying is in a graveyard, Cairn Wanderer has flying. The same is true for Fear, First Strike, Double Strike, Death Touch, Haste, Landwalk, Lifelink, Protection, Reach, Trample, Shroud, and Vigilance. Of course, this is before Hexproof and Intimidate were a thing, so those are not there. But Landwalk and Protection are there, which can be pretty relevant.
Yep. And also, one last honorable mention to the Goblin Heel Cutter, the Shankler's great, great ancestor. Before they were shanking ankles, they were cutting heels.
Yep.
Moving up in the world, inch by inch. 1 foot at a time.
I almost missed that one. I didn't read into it. Thank you for getting
me. All right, I got that bit in. So you guys heard our most anticipated cards. Now it's time for you guys at home to tell us yours. It's time for the Commander Cats home version. Take it away, Calvin.
Time for another edition of the Commander Cast home version. This week's question is, which Fate Reforged card are you most excited about? Over on Twitter we have @BreeVine saying, supplement form from our groomed populate deck. Quotation. In response, copy Eternal Witness and bounce it. We have @KTT_magic saying, sieges. Motor cards are critical in high variant formats where you need spells to do multiple things. Says, reality shift. There is always room for more instant speed creature exile in Tower at the Sky Summoner. And we have @GatheringMagic saying, sage's reverence for my Gruna's Voltron. And over on Facebook, we have Steven saying, Susan and Elsaya. New tiny leaders and new directions for EDH wedge color theme. Gibson saying, the whole wedge myth cycle is pretty flashy and exciting. Not gonna lie. Robert saying, Ugin, because like Karn, he helps to fill holes in certain monocolor decks. Also, he's a badass. We have Aaron chiming in with, Grim Contest, because I'm looking forward to #AskFight trending on Twitter. Reality Shift, because I love me a good removal spell. But seriously, this set is loaded. I don't know that there's just one card that rules them. We have William saying, Legendary Dragons, Ugin Planeswalker, the EDH possibilities. And we have John saying, Island, because they're pretty cool, I hear. And we have John Butt saying, my most excited card would be Shaman of the Great Hunt. That will fit great into my Animar deck. And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. That does it for this week's edition of the Commander Cast home version. Hit us up on Facebook. Follow us over on Twitter. If you see the home version question go up, you answer it, you'll be on it. See you later.
Love yep. me some home version.
All right. And that was our Commander Cast home version. Follow us on the Commander Cast Facebook page and the Twitters. You can #follow home version. We'll do that every week. Next week, we'll be doing one more for our entourage. But hey, you know what? We're not done yet. Calvin, give us one more spin. This time, it's time for the Calvin Micro Minute.
One of the main non-legendary dragons you want to be looking at is the Structure Dragon. It is a 4/4/4 colorless and double green. It is flying, and it has this ability that when it dies, it destroys target non-creature permanent. It's the best green dragon you can currently get. There's a cycle of modal creatures that when they enter the battlefield, they come in, they can either get a +1/+1 counter, or they end up getting a ability. The ability you see them be in something like search your library, or return target cards, or influence hand, or something like that, which can easily be good in Commander because of the fact that one, it's a modal card. Modal cards are awesome. For you Fleshbag Marauder fans, I see there's another card that's a variant of it. It's Merciless Executor. When you enter the battlefield, each player sacrifices a creature, 3/1 Orc Warrior for 2 colors and a black. So now you have another Fleshbag Marauder. There's also a Monastery's Mentor, which is a 2/2 for 2 colorless and white, and it has Prowess, and it has an ability that says when you cast a non-creature spell, put a 1/1 white monk creature token with Prowess onto the battlefield. So it basically covers itself, and you get a bunch of 1/1 tokens that can also end up becoming much, much bigger depending on what other spells you're playing.
Yeah, back to back, Calvin. Only because I wasn't smart enough to remember to do the home version at the beginning. But, you know what, that's okay. Double the Calvin, double your pleasure, double the fun.
Wow.
Or maybe that was the Double Mint commercial. I don't know. So, that was the Micro Mint. We're all done here, folks. We're wrapped up. We're gonna go play with some Gargants. And now it's time for the outro. I love that Tarka has antlers. Like, if you read, like, last week's Boundless Uncharted Realms, when Sarkhan first discovers the dragons, it's beautiful. He sees the dragon broodlings that come out, and they're squawking around, flying, taking snaps at each other, and it's beautiful because they're dragons. He's finally seen dragons on his homeworld. And one of the things he notices is that these dragons have antlers. And, like, it's the cutest thing ever. They have antlers. And they're so cute!
Alright then.
Yep.
Sure.
So many varieties of dragon. I love it. I love dragons.
Durgans.
I love Durgans. I'm trying to get them drunk, Clay. this has been CommanderCast episode 183. I'm going to go ahead and thank my co-host, Clay, for showing up today. Thank you for not catching the plague.
Yeah, I mean, I've sort of been sick for the past month, but it hasn't
killed
my voice.
No, you're not like, no. And thank you to our guest, Christian, for showing up today. Thank you for representing East Coast.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm always happy to come on and get a good discussion today. It was cool.
Yep. I'm going to try to avoid having like other actual podcast personalities on when we do our review shows because they already get to talk about previews and they're probably sick about talking about previews and what else have we got to hear them on previews. So let's give the non-podcasting common man a voice. All right,
sounds
then.
Sounds good.
All right, then. So, contact information. Christian, if people want to get in touch with you, how can they do that?
They can get a hold of me or any of the other great guys we have writing over at East Coast Commander at eastcoastcommander.com. We're on Twitter at EastCoastEDH and on Facebook, just facebook.com/EastCoastCommander. So happy to hear from anybody and anybody and everybody. And thanks for listening, everybody.
All right, Clay, if people want to get in touch with you, how can they do that?
I am on the Twits as at EDHPanda. Kind of been chilling out there.
Spreading the word of the Tiny Leaders.
Oh, yes. Always.
And the word was good.
Hashtag Half-Man. Because Tiny Leaders takes up about the same character of Mark?
Hashtag Three or Less.
Actually, you know what? That needs to be a point of contention. At some point, Mark is going to ask them why they didn't call it Half-Man.
True.
All right. Maybe it's not too late. Maybe we can get this going. I don't know. Maybe that'd be bad for branding. I don't know, but I do know our contact information. If you want to message CommanderCast, be sure to check us out on the Facebook page. You can also tweet us at CommanderCast or email us at CommanderCast@gmail.com. Check us out on the Tumblr, CommanderCast.tumblr.com. Thanks to everyone who contributes to our website. You are wonderful people. And hey, you know what? We got some more of you coming. A couple more people sending in entries. Come on, people. We got some dynasty to build here. You want to be part of it? You want to be part awesome? You go ahead, send us stuff in. We'll go ahead and publish it. Our music for the show is X Meets Heavy Metal Series by 331 E-Rock. We'll see you next week with more community, strategy, and technology. Until then, Flip Teamer! This will be in our little dangly bits, but you know what? Shout out to the guys down in the land down unders for Squirecast. I was listening to their 10th episode today, and you know, they kind of mentioned that they were fans of CommanderCast. So shout out to those guys. They actually sound like they follow our formula a little bit because they had their own dangly bits at the end.
Nice.
I'm always a fan of dangly bits. So good on you guys. Maybe we'll have you on at some point. I don't know if that's going to be a thing or not, but it could be a thing, where the outro ends up becoming a lead-in to the next episode. I don't know, but we'll see.
I like that. As a more listener than contributor, I like that. Just saying.
All right. I'll keep it in mind. Clay, you might want to look into getting MP3 Skype recorded just so you can start recording like a backup.
Oh. What if I don't want to?
Well, if you're...
You can do it, Clay.
If
you
Mark and Calvin... It. If Mark and Calvin aren't here, then someone else needs to record the backup.
Oh.
You think I want to sit around for 3 hours and talk about Commander for the just because? No. I never do that on a regular basis.
Although, for the record, if it does, if the foil Atarka doesn't come with highlighted horns and antlers, I need to get it altered so that they are highlighted, like Godzilla breath, because that's totally what they do.
That'd be cool.
And like I was just telling Clay, building mono black is hard.
Yeah, I just kind of chimed in on that. I have yet to attempt the mono black. I was going to try it a while back, but I never got into it. I'm a big fan of mono white. I have built many mono white commander decks, but I have yet to attempt the mono black.
Mono white decks are easy for me, but the problem with mono black is that I can't find a one. I couldn't find a commander I liked, and the ones that I did like didn't really have like a direction for me to take stuff. And like I like Gissa and all, but she's kind of slow, so I'm trying to figure out how to make up for that. Oh, well, maybe we'll talk about that when we get to the ramp episode.
Maybe. I kind of want to build Legendary Dragon Tribal Scion now.
I thought about building that deck so many times. Like, it would be the perfect deck for me to have Kalia and Mayall in it.
But now that we have 5 new Legendary Dragons, I want
more. It's a great time to build it.
Yeah. I'm going to build the Artarica deck, and I'm going to put Jugen the Rising Star in it, and I'm just going to do it just because he's a Legendary Dragon. In green. So if anyone drops Iona and tries to name Red to keep me out of dragons, I'll go, yeah, no, that's not happening. I still got Durgans.
Durgans.
As soon as I drop Xenagos, I'm going to start sounding the air raid sirens. I'm going to be like, okay, guys, you've got exactly 2 turns to deal with this before the dragon comes out and just kills you all.
It's going to happen.
It's going to happen. Oh. All right, guys. So, let's go ahead and get this started, because I am going to start cracking down on some Odyssey flashback drafts and some cons before we go into pre-release weekend. Thank you, Moto. Let's hope you don't break this time. Actually, that's the...
It will.
That is the most bullshit thing that I have ever seen, actually. The Boros Battlemaster, I think he is? The
Battle Shaper?
Yeah, the Battle Shaper. It was finally down to... like, me and 2 other guys, one guy who had just been kicked in the crotch all night long, because he had been using Nissa to animate his lands, and the Rafik deck kept playing Creature Wrath. And, like, the guy had to rebuild his mana base, like, 3 times, and he just kept losing him.
Sucks to suck.
I know. And the other one was a Zergo deck who had his Zergo tucked. So once Rafik is finally down, I'm thinking, okay, yeah, I can finally do this. So the Battle Shaper went and made one of my guys, like, everything. Like, he couldn't attack or block, but he had to attack or block if able. And so Moto had a meltdown. It often does. Yeah, it kept telling me that I had to make a block, but it wouldn't let me use my guy that had the block at all. So I ended up just conceding that match with the belief that, yeah, if I had been allowed to untap, I could have just used Overrun and Overwhelming Stampede to knock them both out. Also, apparently Brain Maggot is OP because it continues letting you look at your opponent's hand after that you've taken a card. Which it doesn't actually do, but Amoto is apparently part creature, part telepathy. Okay, yeah. Clay, what happened? Did Dirk get the attack?
Yeah, basically. dropped some shit. I just realized Typhoid Rats is being reprinted.
Yeah, and the art's way better, too, which is nice.
Actually, I want to see it, because I think I remember seeing it before, and I thought it was like
1-1 Death Touch.
Oh, yeah, there it is. Yeah, that's such
originally in Innistrad?
Yes.
Yeah, this one's a lot gnarlier.
Dude, Typhoid Rats is like a boss in draft.
He is. Like, he stops everything stone cold.
I ran it in my Popper Cube for like 6 months for black, and like in the Suicide Black archetype, like, people drop that, like, if you dip it in play, like, a Vampire Lacerator or something like that, turn 1, they drop that, and you're just like, oh, man, like, now I'm going to have to play something good, and it's going to die to that piece of garbage, and...
You know what card beats Typhoid Rats handily?
What?
Pack Rat.
Assuming you have mana and a card to make another one.
I guess you could call it a rat race.
Oh, I see what you did there.
That was low even for you.
That was clever.
It was, but I was also on the dad joke subreddit earlier today. Like, that's just good. That's my happy place. Whenever I'm feeling desperate need for a pick-me-up, I just go to the dad joke subreddit. Ashley is ruining the day that she ever linked me to it. Okay.
Hey, Will, you know what we could do?
What?
We could hijack this episode and talk about tiny leaders.
No, we can talk a little bit.
Tiny
Leaders is going to come up inevitably when we get to talking about the new commanders.
When we get to talk about Shuyun, Alesha, and Yasoha.
Yeah. But trust me, Clay, we actually have, like, two guys who made the formats coming on.
Sweet.
In a couple of weeks. Like, next week is going to be Teemer, and then the week after that, we're going to do our Tiny Leaders thing, and they're going to come on as guests.
Nice.
Awesome, and then we can harass them on why the rest of the swords aren't banned yet.
I need to finish drafting up the Enix and Saimidi prototype, play that on Cockatrice, and then I'll actually buy the cards and finish out that deck.
I found my Mutavaults finally, so Brumaz actually has one now.
I wish I kept those things. Like, how much are they going for right now?
They're only like $10 for M14 ones. It's not too bad.
Okay, that's not bad. Like, they're out of standard. That makes sense.
Yeah. I also need to find a Kildoran outpost, because that thing is really good late game.
Yeah, it is.
Okay. Oh, I just unsleeved one.
I've got one left, and it's gotta be Aurelia.
Mm.
Okay. So, for real now, showtime.
Durgans.
Of Tarkir. Way back in ye olden days of the original. What is that? What's that sound?
It's not coming from me.
Sounds like.
Christian?
Cards of the Fate?
Quiet over here.
Are you shuffling or?
No, I am not shuffling currently.
Currently? He stops.
No, I wasn't shuffling when the noise was on.
Okay.
Well, what do you got? Is it still on there now? I don't have anything on my end.
No, it's not there.
I don't know. Maybe we have a ghost shuffler. Maybe Mark got killed by the plague and he's come back.
He's come back to haunt us all.
Maybe it's the ghost of my chronic shuffling that usually happens while recording this, but is somehow not happening right now.
And is it happening every day?
Every day, I am shuffling.
All right, Clay, you keep Christian occupied. I need to go grab some water.
Okay.
Hey, play it.
So,
you like stuff?
Seen any good movies lately?
Not particularly, actually. Big Hero 6, that's about it.
That was the last one that I saw in theaters, too.
Yeah, I took my kids, they both loved it, it was good.
Me and my girlfriend went over Thanksgiving break. It was a lot of fun.
I love that there's a soundtrack to the intermission now. That's fantastic.
I'm pretty sure it usually gets edited out, but sometimes I just randomly grab it.
Just go to it.
I was actually listening to the first episode I did, and then I listened to Andy's first episode, just to kind of compare and contrast how we both started our careers off. And what I realized was that, one, Andy might have been salty as hell, but I was a little shit back then. It's like, every other sentence my co-host and guests are trying to say, I'm trying to interject because I just have all this stuff I need to share. I need to share all these things. Oh, hey, you're in the middle of talking something. Hey, that reminded me of something that I need to talk about. Wow. No wonder people hated me back then. I mean, that and I wasn't Canadian, but.
Yeah. It's only us special people.
Only.
I'm going to grab a drink. I'll be right back, you guys.
Go ahead. Hey, Clay.
Yeah?
Have you gotten any of those pop vinyl figures?
I have bought them for other people, but I do not own any.
So, the Sarkavol, right? Like, he's sweet. Yeah. He's got his spear, he's got his Mardu clothes on. You can even see the little headrun tied to his spear. He's got a problem, though. And I don't know if this is universal to all Sarkrans or just the ones that my local store was selling. But his feet are kind of slanted, so he doesn't stand up straight unless you forcibly bend his feet some.
Huh.
Like, I took him back to the store to exchange him. We opened the other ones to kind of find one, and they had bent feet, too. It's the weirdest thing. Like, I've been bending his feet back to try and get him a little straighter. But, I don't know. He's a hard guy to help stand up.
Weird.
However, I am super stoked that the night I did bring card this out to the GameStop, or, yeah, GameShop, I was able to play Sarkhan Vol, followed by Sarkhan the Mad, followed by Sarkhan Dragonspeaker, all in succession.
I just walked into that conversation and it sounded amazing.
It was perfect flavor win. What's even better is that I wanted to kill off the Sarkhan the Mad so I could play Dragonspeaker, so I was like, okay, we'll use his Bob ability. Oh, it's a land. Well, no, I can't play Dragonspeaker this turn. That's great.
Aww.
I mean, I guess I technically could have still played Dragonspeaker, but it's like, well, if Sarkhan the Mad's going to stick around for another turn, eat some damage, or whatever. Only on Commander Cast can you find quality ukulele music.
Hey, it's good. Whenever a dragon you control attacks, defending player's creature... Pardon me, defending player... Wow, this is bad.
Humans versus Dargons. Duel decks confirmed. No, wait, they already did that.
Knights versus...
Well, hold on. When was Knights versus... When did Knights versus Dragons come out?
A long time ago, but it wasn't old enough to be put in the anthology.
Yeah, it would have been, like...
I think... I'm not actually sure. Because it was after Elspeth came out, I think.
Oh, I want to see... Let's see, Knights versus Dragons. I want to see when this came out. Because... Let's see. 2011. So, 4 years ago. Okay, that's not quite with the design window. Let's see, like 2 years ago would have been 2013, which means... Okay. So it would have been really cool if this had come out, like, about... Like, they had been planning this about the time they started playing for Dragons of Tarkir, but...
Yeah.
Oh, well.
ManorCast.com.